You're listening to the UAV Digest, the weekly audio podcast bringing you coverage of unmanned aerial vehicles and systems. Find us at theuavdigest.com.
All right, let's pick up this afternoon with our public safety panel. And we have two panelists here who are very knowledgeable in this field, well-respected for sure. First, to my right, your left, obviously, is Robert Machel. He is the sheriff of Oneida County. He's held that position since January of 2011. And then also with me, on my left, your right, joining him up here is Dan Wares. He is now the Onondaga County Commissioner of Emergency Management. So, again, like we did in the earlier panel, I'm going to give them both a chance to kind of make a brief presentation, and then we certainly want to open it up to any questions that that you might have for them. So, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Certainly an honor for me to be here. This is definitely a topic that I like to talk about, and hopefully in the very near future, The sheriff's office here in Oneida County will be utilizing a UAS. That's certainly our goal. We have a few hurdles to get over. Obviously, the biggest one is the financial hurdle. But the one thing I wanted to address, and then I could talk a little bit about what we would like to utilize our UAS for. I feel it's the most important aspect of this whole thing. It's how we roll out law enforcement utilizing UASs in today's day and age. Obviously, the biggest issue that we deal with is the concern of privacy. We constantly hear from people their concerns as to law enforcement utilizing UASs to spy on them, law enforcement, using UASs, in their regular duties and then coming across something and, they're concerned that their Fourth Amendment rights may be violated if something is a search and seizure issue. So again, I think it's important when all of us, in this particular community, when we get ready to unveil our use of UASs, I think we need to do it in a fashion where the community is buying into that also. We need to have it accepted by the people in our community, and we need to make sure that they understand exactly what we're going to be using it for and exactly what we're not going to be using it for. Specifically the Oneida County Sheriff's Office, we were one of the first law enforcement agencies in the Northeast to take on a project, to take on a program called Project Lifesaver. Project Lifesaver is a program in which those folks who suffer from Down syndrome, younger folks with Down syndrome, older folks who may suffer from dementia, anyone who may tend to wander away, Project Lifesaver has been crucial for these families and for keeping these people safe. Here in Oneida County, the Sheriff's Office, we have about 42 clients who are part of the Oneida County Project Lifesaver. Most of those folks are dementia patients. We do have some younger folks who have Down syndrome. And they wear our wristbands, our Project Lifesaver wristbands, which to simplify the project, the wristbands, which look very similar to a watch, they have a frequency in them. And should the person come up missing, the family member or those in charge of watching those folks, they make a call to 911. The first responding law enforcement personnel on the scene, they verify that the party is in fact missing. And once that is the case, then our deputies who are assigned to the program 24 hours a day, they respond to the last known location of the missing person. They program the frequency into our equipment. We have both handheld equipment and vehicle-mounted equipment, and the search begins. Luckily, we've had a 100% success rate in locating the folks when they do come up missing. But there have been some very challenging cases, whether it be terrain, whether it be a loss of time or a great length of time from when the person was last seen, which, a lot of times we really don't know where to begin. We begin at the last known location, but if several minutes or in some cases a few hours have passed, it's very difficult for us to actually get the search underway. We're very fortunate that our neighbors to the west, the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office, they do respond with their helicopter, and they have Project Lifesaver equipment on their helicopter, so they do assist us from time to time. But that would be our most important use of a UAS. when we are able to get one. The one that's on display over here has Project Lifesaver equipment on it, the Lockheed Martin one. They do have an agreement with Project Lifesaver. And that in itself, I think, is huge for law enforcement to be able to utilize the UAS to locate those missing folks. And I think the public would certainly buy into that. You know, again, we're not spying on people. We're merely using it to locate missing people, to save lives in many cases. And then there's certainly many other applications where we could use it, whether it's doing aerial photos of fatal car accidents that we have to reconstruct. That is a very costly thing for law enforcement when we have to hire out, in many cases, for someone to do that. Our SWAT team, certainly for instances where there may be some type of armed standoff, again, having the ability to utilize a UAS to assess the scene, to get a closer look without having to send people in. We know here firsthand in Oneida County, how quickly these situations can turn. Just a few years ago, one of our deputies was killed, shot and killed at a domestic dispute where there was a standoff with an armed individual. So we know firsthand how important it is to have this modern technology to be able to help us. Infrared camera, looking for lost people in the woods. We, Oneida County, a huge majority of our 1,250 square miles is rural land, wooded land. Every hunting season, we're guaranteed to get those hunters that do get lost. And in many cases, these searches go several hours, and in some cases have gone several days. Again, where if we had the ability for, had the availability of a UAS, we certainly would, like I said, we'd be able to do our job much more efficient and, again, much quicker. So I think if we can ensure the public that, these are the things we're going to be using a UAS for, and to have a very strict set of policies and procedures for having the for the UAS in our operating procedures. Getting those people out in the community who, we know right now when we're ready to unveil something like this, we know that they're going to be against it. I think if we bring them in early on and hopefully, explain to them exactly what we're going to do and what we're not going to do with them, I think that's the key. So I certainly, like I said, I certainly believe that getting the public to buy into why we want to have a UAS and what we're going to use it for will be key to its success.
Great. Thank you as well for having me here this afternoon. I think this is a really exciting topic. It's one I've thought a lot about previously, never really tried to put my thoughts down onto one piece of paper. But I tried to do that last night as I was getting ready to come here. And kind of echoing off what the sheriff mentioned, I think one of the importance is the information sharing with the community to let them know how you're going to use it and have some of those controls in place. So they know who sees the data, they know who can extract that data, save that data, and what's going to be used with it. And in emergency management, I try to look at things in all four phases of preparedness, response, recovery, and mitigation. And as I kind of took this UAV, I almost used the taboo word there, but try to take my thoughts there and put it into those four phases and ways that we would use it, because I do really think that it would fit into all four phases of emergency management. First, with preparedness, I think that one thing now that we do is there's flyovers for GIS mapping and different things that are used by planning agencies. They're used by the 911 center, and that data is overlaid with information that comes in through the center when a call is made, so we know exactly what building or close to what building someone's calling from. And right now, those are very costly endeavors to have happen. And to me, I think, well, geez, maybe this is an opportunity to make that a cheaper endeavor and to be able to update our information more regularly. I'm not sure exactly how often we do it now, but I know it's not probably as often as some people would like. So that's one opportunity there. And with that, with the GIS mapping also, the National Weather Service uses it for floodplain development, and they can overlay that there. So that kind of feeds into our data and our analysis and our planning efforts to see where we need to focus our planning and what communities and different things there. So I see one opportunity, another opportunity there. Also in preparedness, I look at special events. A lot of times you have, there's marathons that we have in Syracuse, half marathons, any kind of other event that a lot of times we rely on observers with a radio Sometimes the information may not be as clear as we would like coming back into a coordination center. So that's another set of eyes that I see that you'd be able to deploy potentially with some of those special events to feed back into a command post so you know what's going on, you know the status. Or if something does happen, maybe you can get somebody to that site a little bit closer so you can make an assessment of what kind of resources you need to send to that incident at the event without overwhelming the event too or interrupting the event. Some of the other things from a response perspective, you know, the sheriff mentioned a few of them, search and rescue. You know, I immediately thought of the Wilderness Search and Rescue Team in our county. It'd kind of be a huge asset to them. Right now they do a lot of stuff by foot. We do have the sheriff's office, and then kind of adding into the sheriff's office helicopter, as he mentioned, and kind of adding into that, I also thought about a thermal imaging camera on a drone, or on a UAS, sorry, there's that word again. Something that we could use, there's been large fires in the county, there will continue to be large fires, and having the ability to put a thermal imaging camera over a large structure to kind of see if there's hot spots or to see if there's different things going on where we have to focus our efforts or kind of redeploy assets so that you can make sure that those hot spots are extinguished, or just one other way that I could see something like this being used in a kind of a large incident beyond the law enforcement scope. Since I've been with the county in the past few months, we've had a number of things already where we've gone to rescue people, fire departments have gone to rescue people that we've assisted on the scene with, of people that have fallen down cliffs or into gorges. And we've seen, so there's a couple of issues there. There's the possibility of radio communications that could be interrupted just based on the towers and the antenna angles and whether or not the signal can get down on the other side of that cliff or not. You know, is it possible that we could put some kind of small radio repeater on this to get that signal going back up and down the cliff to the people who aren't necessarily physically responding, but the people that need to stay away from the scene so that they can maintain contact with the 911 center? With that, sometimes these situations, we can't necessarily get to a person quickly. So I look at that and say, is this something that we could deploy in a well-coordinated manner where we could get eyes down on that, verify that somebody maybe actually did fall, find out what kind of condition they're in, and then kind of determine our game plan from that point forward. So see it as a valuable asset to search and rescue fire departments and EMS in the same way. So one reason might be we don't put our people into a risk by putting them into a situation where somebody may not be as in grave condition as we thought. Maybe they're not even there. As I'm sure the sheriff would echo, the information that we first get isn't always the most accurate. So it'd be nice to be able to verify some of that before we put additional people at risk. Additionally, hazmat. A lot of times with hazmat, you don't want to necessarily put your people into a situation if you can avoid it. I see a UAS as being a great tool. Maybe you can get downrange a little bit and find out what kind of chemicals you're dealing with or what kind of fertilizer it might be or what was on that truck that tipped over on the side of 81 or Route 90 or something like that. Kind of moving forward into the recovery message, one of the big things that emergency managers are tasked with is doing damage assessments and coordinating damage information and determining whether or not we may meet FEMA eligibility for some type of reimbursement. A lot of times that's very hard to do when you're talking about a large county, try to get an accurate assessment of what the data is, get some kind of dollar figure attached to it, some kind of guesstimated dollar figure. So I look at this and say, here's another opportunity. Not only we could GIS tag it based on the location, tie it back to a map and have some kind of dollar figure attached to it and do that in a much more efficient manner than by sending people out to each location where we have damage reports. So just another way that might be able to help us improve our work. With that also, and this is critical infrastructure protection, we do a number of things in Onondaga County where we do assessments along with New York State. And we do different assessments of buildings from a critical infrastructure perspective. So looking at the security of the building, looking at some of the other resources that are required from the building. And part of that, a lot of times, we do use a helicopter to fly routes into the location, kind of do a flyover of the building and do a videotape of it so that responders can have that information if they were ever forced to respond to something there. And with that, again, comes a lot of expense by getting those air assets into the area that are equipped with the right equipment. And I see this as another opportunity where we could probably do more of those types of projects with less of a tax on the resources. Like I mentioned earlier, the last one really from a mitigation perspective that I had kind of to top off or the final four phases of emergency management or the potential flood zones. We work with the National Weather Service. We work with different places to try to map those out and to determine where we might have impacts in the county, where we need to focus our efforts. And that gets back into that GIS mapping and the overlay and try to determine some of that. So really, I think regardless of what phase it is in emergency management from that perspective, you know, one of the terms you hear a lot out of the state right now is a force multiplier. And I really see that this is something that could do that. Not only, you know, gives us an extra set of eyes, but it would help us reduce our deployment of resources in areas where they may not be needed and have those resources be available to another location or another type of incident where they may be, you know, desperately needed, and to provide that help and kind of prioritize how we do different things. So with that, I think we'll open it up to questions.
Sheriff and Mr. Weirs, kind of the same question, but from two different sides. You talked about the benefits of a UAS or UAV to the department. Can you talk about the challenges of enforcement and some of the other things that people have talked about? And then, Mr. Weirs, kind of answer the same question. Have you set up an emergency management plan such that if somebody deployed a series of 4, 5, 6 UAS with some sort of weapon or something, is there a plan? Have you guys thought about that?
So. All right. First off, we do get a lot of complaints. It's a great question. We get a lot of complaints from folks who see the UASs flying over their property. I think our first one came in probably about a year, year and a half ago. It was a local person who's very vocal in the community, and he had actually one of the cameras on one of the hunting cameras on his property actually picked up a drone flying over his property. And that kind of, the call was made to us, and from that point we've tried to do research into what enforcement mechanisms are out there, and there aren't a lot. We see these things all over. We know there's a lot of them out there. I've actually talked to members of the New York City Police Department and their aviation unit. They have a very difficult time with just regular people who are buying these UASs offline, you know, online, or you know, buying the home kits and flying them without having any knowledge or any of the, the common sense things they should and shouldn't be doing. They've been used, obviously, to, sort of a high-tech peeping Tom type of thing. And again, there's not a lot of enforcement there. I mean, as you know, the airspace isn't owned by the property owner, and that's one thing we have a very difficult time explaining to people, that sure, you may own those 50 acres and you own the land and the buildings on them, but once you're in the air, and I really don't know, I've been told all kinds of things, but from, I've been told from 0 to 50 miles up, it's airspace that's not owned by, it's FAA airspace. So again, obviously there's a lot of restrictions on, they've got to be in sight and they can't fly over a certain height. But again, how do you police that? I mean, how would you possibly begin to police that? We patrol a big area, 1,250 square miles. We handle all kinds of complaints. A majority of our work is in the rural parts of the county because our two cities do have their own police departments. But again, it's a challenge for us, and we try to explain to people that. Because the initial reaction from homeowners is, and this particular guy, I keep going back to him because I'm very familiar with him, but he said, the next time that flies over my property, I'm going to shoot it down. And I had to explain to him that when you do that, we're going to be arresting you for criminal mischief, or you're probably going to be causing an extensive amount of damage to this piece of equipment. And we can't arrest the person for trespass because he's merely flying over your property. I'm sure, if he was hovering over their window looking into their house, now we may have a different situation. But, we haven't dealt with those specific things. I know NYPD, they deal with that a lot in the high rises. They get complaints on a daily basis of UASs, hovering outside of high rise windows looking in. And again, in most cases, they have a very difficult time tracing them back to the people operating them. The same guy that I talked to from NYPD, he said that they've had some very close calls with their aviation unit, with their helicopters, and these UASs almost crashing into them because there's inexperienced people flying these things. And again, that's a huge problem. So we definitely, when I say we, I mean the lawmakers at the federal level definitely need to get some standards into place. And again, policing them, I'm not sure how that is going to happen because... and there are literally, I don't even know how many there are out there, in America today, but I can only imagine there's hundreds of thousands of them flying around, but very few law enforcement have them. So You know, they're getting the technology and we're not in many cases. So that part is very frustrating. Just to go back, one of our major events here in this area, we have the Boilermaker Road Race. It's a large road race, 15,000 runners. And you know, we put out a no drone policy, no fly zone that day, and we didn't have any complaints from anyone. So no one, I think merely putting out that press release that no UASs could be flown that day, from what we could gather, everyone complied with that. We didn't have any issues. But if someone were to violate that, there are no real consequences attached to that. I mean, they just disobeyed our order, but again, we can't charge them with anything for doing that. So,
as far as planning goes, you know, we haven't written any specific plans related to some type of incident that comes from a drone, but I don't think it may not be necessary. And the reason I say that is that because what's the impact? And a lot of our plans will be impact written or be whatever the substance might be. So a few things jump to my mind when you mention it. Okay, is it some type of explosive device? Is it some kind of dispersal device of some hazardous material? Can they put a plastic gun on a drone now? I mean, you can make a gun on a printer at home. Do they do something like that? So the response would be more based on that specific thing and not necessarily what caused it. From my perspective, the investigative side would be very different, I would assume. But for us, it's going to be, it's a hazmat incident. How do we identify the substance? You know, part of that would be related to the investigation. You know, and then what are the mitigating actions that need to be taken for it? And looking at it from that perspective. So I don't know. I think it might be a duplication, potentially. I mean, without, looking into it entirely. But that's my initial reaction, is that really we have a lot of those things in place. We have a hazardous materials team regionally for Central New York, and they have the equipment to identify substances, and they can do some of that without, regardless of where it comes from, whether it's someone driving down the street, if it's someone driving flying a UAS over that same street. So,
And one last thing I wanted to mention, we did have a couple instances where people have reported to us things that they've seen or things that they've seen growing on private property. While they were flying their own UASs around, they report that to the police. And again, depending on the circumstances, when I first spoke today earlier, I mentioned the whole Fourth Amendment thing. A lot of these things, I'm assuming, are going to be tested in the very near future, and decisions will be coming down by the Supreme Court, because the court's going to look at it. They look at it a little differently when the general public sees something as to when law enforcement sees something. So again, whether this is going to be grounds for some type of Supreme Court decision on, the whole search and seizure thing when something is seen from whether it's a private UAS or a law enforcement one. So time will tell on that. It's going to be interesting to watch as that unfolds.
Yes, sir. So given your potential applications, both counties, and seeing as how you have, one of the FAA UAS test sites in your backyard, have you been making any plans to actually, exploring opportunities with, making use of the new air test, UAS test site? And
specifically, the sheriff's office has. We've had a few demos done for us. We initially and quickly thought of the whole idea of utilizing a UAS to track our missing people. And that's kind of how that whole idea was born. Was actually at Griffiths, at one of the test sites when we were dropping the idea of how can we utilize our Project Lifesaver equipment on a UAS. So that idea was kind of born right out there. And certainly it's an opportunity for us. Like I said, as we see this whole thing unfold, our biggest challenge, when I say our, at the United County Sheriff's Office, is the whole financial end of things. I have a $40 million budget, which may seem like a big number, but when you have 435 people working for you and you're running a jail and a road patrol division and all these other things, it's very difficult for me to come up with, $100,000 to make that purchase that I really want to make. So I don't know if it's like other things in time. Will the price come down? I hope so. I don't know. But again, we feel it's a crucial piece of equipment that we want, and I hope to get it very soon. in the beginning, we were a little slow to get some of the modern pieces of law enforcement equipment. We were very fortunate just last year. We finally got a very state-of-the-art mobile command post, a self-contained mobile command post, which is a huge component of our agency now. It's utilized multi-jurisdictional. But that's the first phase, and things such as the UAS will come next, you know, where you can actually you can observe everything the UAS is seeing, whether, you know, when you're going over that critical incident, or if it's a standoff, you know, we want our SWAT team to be able to be inside our Bearcat, our armored rescue vehicle for the SWAT team. We want them to be able to see what the UAS is seeing, just like the robot can go in. But obviously a UAS is going to be able to do things that our robot can't do. So all those things, you know, it's very exciting. But again, for me, it's coming down to getting creative with coming up with the money to make that purchase.
We haven't come up with any kind of concrete plan yet. I mean, but at the same point, I've been in this job for 3 months. So I've been learning a lot about what's going on and kind of developing a strategic plan going forward. And, you know, especially after I've started to put some of this stuff down and kind of compile this into what the uses really would be, not only for our department, but for departments across the county, because that's a lot of what we do is we provide assets that we have that other departments maybe can't afford, is how can, you know, we maintain them, we keep them, and we can go assist them at the scene of something. And this is something that may, you know, come up to the top of that list after I've kind of come up with this long list of things and different ways that it would be of assistance to, you know, the fire, police, EMS agencies, wilderness search and rescue, hazardous material teams. You know, I really see this as something that, you know, it'll definitely stay, you know, on my radar, no pun intended, as I move forward with that after kind of compiling all this, and I see a lot more advantages and kind of as I put it down together. So
thank you.
Got two questions. So in terms of enforcing the rules and regulation put forth by the FAA, which I just read a memo that was described earlier in the morning, they basically delegate all the responsibility of enforcing the rules to you guys. And for that matter, in your opinion, what do you think would be the best kind of technology that you wish you have right now in your toolbox to enforce the law?
That's a good question, too. It almost seems like every time something new comes out or there's a new regulation, it falls back on us to be able to enforce it. You know, and again, I go back to the diversity of not only our community, but the diversity of the things that the sheriff's office deals with. You know, we could go from, you know, assisting one of our city police departments with an inner city type problem to 5 minutes later being out dealing with an Amish community and their issues. So we're like all over the place, very diverse. So it's a huge challenge, because anytime there's something new that we have to do, or a new legislation that we have to enforce, or new technology that we have to learn how to do, again, I go back to, you know, all the deputies that are working on the road, they've all got to be updated on this or trained on this. You know, what are the laws that we're going to be enforcing? Are we talking, you know, are they federal level laws? I mean, it certainly, if we get into something as simplistic as someone, you know, peeping in through the windows, looking at someone in their private home, that's a simple fix. I mean, that's a penal law violation, and we can deal with that. But again, when we're dealing with UASs flying, you know, whether they're in flying at the appropriate height, or are they flying out of sight of the person operating them, or you know, flying over another's property, it's such a gray area at this stage, you know, so I really don't have a concrete answer for you. You know, we do take the calls when our people do deal with people complaining about UASs. We kind of refer them to the different websites that we've been given. Our airport commissioner here in Oneida County, Commissioner Stark, he's been very good with us. Anytime he gets updates or any of these other information matters or pamphlets from whether it's the FAA or whomever, he immediately forwards that to us. So we're all working together trying to learn, you know, how we're going to deal with this thing. But again, it's so new, and I don't have a lot of answers as to how we're going to enforce those things. It's not as easy as, you know, pulling up to a house and writing the guy an appearance ticket for, you know, unlawfully flying his UAS. It's just, again, it's going to be a challenge and a learning curve for us.
I see. Thank you. I do have another question. So there has been concern regarding malicious use of UAV for smuggling stuff into the correction facility.
Yes.
You just mentioned you are in charge of one of them.
Yep.
So is there a concern to you?
Obviously, I've read stories around the country about UAS as being utilized to fly contraband into rec areas or recreational areas at correctional facilities. We're very fortunate. A majority of our facility, we have a 632-bed county jail. 450 of those beds are within a newer portion of the complex, and the rec yards are actually indoors, so our inmates are never outside. A majority of the three-quarters of them are never outside during rec time. They're in it's basically an indoor basketball court with a very high overhead door way up that's fenced in, and we open that door up so Mother Nature's air and sunlight comes through. We meet our requirements for outdoor rec time, even though we're not outdoors. Three outdoor rec yards that we use in the old part of the jail, they all have roofs on them. So our inmates and the way our facility is set up, they are never outside an area where there's no roof overhead. We do perimeter checks every 30 minutes in the facility, exterior perimeter checks by correction officers on foot. Our entire facility has cameras that are monitored 24 hours a day. So that's not a concern for us, but I know that there have been instances around the country where items, both contraband being drugs and weapons, have been smuggled into correctional facilities by the use of UASs. So it is a concern, but here locally, and I can almost speak for Onondaga County, both of their facilities, they're set up very similar, so it wouldn't be a concern with them the way the complexes are constructed.
So I suppose all the unit has these, they're air-conditioned, and there's no open window?
Well, even my office doesn't have windows that open. I can see outside, but I can't open them. But some parts of it are air conditioned, but most of it is not.
I've seen the footage that a quadcopter with an extended stick with a handgun attached to the end and fly close to the window, and the person on the other side of the window, as long as he can pass through the opening in the window, just grab the gun. So it doesn't have to be open space.
Right. Like, yeah, and again, that wouldn't happen in our facility the way we're set up. But these are things, you know, when I talk to police officers who have been on the job or have been retired from the job for 10 or 20 years, you know, they were like moving into a whole new era when they went from revolvers to semi-automatic handguns. Now we're talking about UASs and robots, and I mean, they just they're amazed at how technology has changed in such a short time, and it's all for the good for the most part. But we do have these issues, like you mentioned, where, you know, they are used for negative things, and those are things that we have to stay on top of.
Thank you.
Questions for the sheriff.
Yes, sir.
This is kind of a follow-on to something you said earlier. Would you treat information you got from a civilian source, UAS flight, versus one of your own UAS flights, is one of those more actionable than the others? If it's
well, it depends on the circumstance, and it depends on the issue. Obviously, if someone, again, I'm giving you hypotheticals, if someone called in that with their UAS, they saw some type of, you know, crime against a person being done, you know, whether it's a child being harmed or, you know, something they viewed from overhead, then obviously that would take immediate response from us, not necessarily with UASs, you know, whether it's some type of crime in progress or some type of child abuse and something of that nature. We're really not going to be concerned about that. We want to make sure that whatever happening, the person is safe. The information we get, which we do get from time to time regarding, you know, I'll give you an example, you know, a large marijuana grow potentially on private property. Obviously, there's a protocol that has to be followed so that the information we are gathering it in a very legal manner. Because obviously, if we end up getting a search warrant, which ultimately leads to an arrest, which ultimately we want to lead to a conviction, we need to make sure that it's done appropriately. And obviously, we need to make sure that it's done without violating, you know, people's rights. So that is, again, on a case-by-case basis. But we do get those calls, not necessarily all the time with UASs, but we do get calls from people who are alleging things are happening, and obviously we have to verify them before we take action. And in many cases, it wouldn't pan out, and in some cases, it does. So again, it'd be on a case-by-case basis. But we want to make it very clear, and that's why in the beginning when I talked about how important it is to roll this out with complete transparency, with complete openness. We want the people to know what exactly we're going to be utilizing the UAS for and what we're not going to be using it for. And, you know, just from Every police department around the country has a different relationship with their community. We've seen some, obviously, in the news that haven't had a real positive relationship with their community, and that's where the difficulties come into play. That's why it's so important for all police agencies of all levels to be able to have a positive working relationship with their community so that when you do roll out something new, or when I go on TV and I say something, I want people to say that, you know, I want people to believe what I'm saying and have trust in me. So I think that goes back to all of our members from the deputy all the way up to the sheriff, that we are respecting people's rights, we're respecting their privacy, but at the same time, we have a job to do. So it's a balance, and it's a balance that we have to have trust in one another, being the police and the community. So it's going to be a challenge. It really is. It's definitely going to be a challenge. This may be one of the more difficult things once it's actually happening here. Our most recent challenge was dealing with Second Amendment issues, when the SAFE Act came out. That was a very challenging thing for law enforcement, and we needed people to know what we were and weren't going to do and what the law was telling us to do. And I think when you have an open dialogue with people, it's so much easier. So, again, like I said, we're going to continue to build our trust in the community and hope that, they have faith in us that we're doing the right thing.
And one more quick question. Do you see a time where you might have to have a search warrant issued in advance for a UAS flight to actually make that admissible in court or something like that?
You may have to. Obviously, we always want search warrants. Obviously, they're always going to be issued in advance. I don't know how the courts are going to accept, if the only thing we're providing the court for a search warrant is the video footage from a UAS flight. I don't know how the court's going to accept that. That goes back to, we're going to have to wait and see how it plays out, because obviously when we go for search warrants, the judges, expect certain things from our people before they issue those search warrants. We're going down a whole new road here, so it's going to be interesting to see.
Yep. Okay, yep. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Hello, gentlemen. Two-part question. If you had an FAA law that was in place, on a local level or state level, are you allowed to enforce it? And the second one, have you successfully prosecuted anybody based on a UAS encounter?
I can answer the second one easier than the first one. We haven't made any arrests with anyone using UASs. All our complaints were handled by communicating with both the person who's making the complaint and I don't even want to use the word offender, because in a lot of cases the people weren't aware that they were violating what these people thought was their privacy. In many cases we explain to people that, look, fly it on your own property, fly it where, so that you're not, making these people uncomfortable. In most cases they were good with that. We haven't had any resistance from that. There were a lot of times when we don't have closure to the cases because we don't know who owns these UASs. They appear, they're gone. Obviously, in the more rural areas, it's easier to figure out because most neighbors know who's doing this. But in your suburbs, it's a little more difficult because there's just so many close houses. To be able to say that, if there was a specific law that we could utilize, on a good day when no one is sick and everybody is working, I have 6 deputies patrolling 23 of the 26 towns and 12 of the 19 villages in Oneida County. Those communities, we primarily patrol the areas that don't have their own police, and then we provide secondary service to those that do when they call for it. So we're patrolling 23 towns and 12 villages. I don't know if I'd have the personnel to specifically dedicate to this issue. When the calls come our way, we prioritize them. Actually, our 911 center, like Onondaga County's, they prioritize the calls for us. If they've got an in-progress call and then they've got a call of someone who has a UAS flying over their property, they're going to give us the in-progress call first, and then we'll get that call second, and we will... we'll deal with it on a case-by-case basis.
But can you enforce a federal law?
I don't know as though there's a law for us to specific. There's not a section and a subsection when we're talking about UASs. I mean, we see guidelines. You go on the FAA website, and the guidelines. Not, you know, again, I don't have it in front of me, but you know, not flying over 400 feet, flying with a person with the operator in sight. You know, those type of things. But again, you know, I don't have a section in front of me of what it's punishable by and what the consequences are. And again, you know, those are, we would default or defer those questions or those concerns to the FAA officials. And I don't think they have UAS police that are available to come out and make those arrests. So you know where I'm going with this. There isn't a whole lot that we can do. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank
you.
Much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Find more great content at theuavdigest.com.